Okay.
There were two very divergent philosophies that cropped up by 1970. One was a group of people, including Bob Howard, who was at that time the director of the Duke program, who very much wanted to see the Academy only represent those people who were from the quote type A schools. And there was a group of us, myself included, who took the position that ABC or whatever, we needed to have strengths and we needed to represent everybody because we needed the numbers, we needed the money that the numbers would generate, and we needed the strength that the numbers would generate. And in fact, it was a real divisive, it's a very divisive period. And Godkin's representing the inclusive view and McQuarrie on the Duke faculty representing the exclusive view went head-to-head. Godkin's lost. So a guy named John McQuarrie took over from me and basically, kept the Academy at Duke and ran the Academy out of the Duke program, basically with a position that we would only represent the type A PAs. In the meantime, Godkin's was at the Mayo Clinic, and we knew that he was going to come to work for me in Oklahoma. And a fellow named John Braun, who was from the class ahead of us, had decided that he was going to run for president. He basically had the philosophy that McQuarrie had, that the Academy would only represent the type A people. And we knew that Godkin's couldn't get elected because against Braun because of his views of the Academy representing a larger number. Braun worked for the national, for the government. At the time, he was at the National Institutes of Health and working in the office that was beginning to fund PA programs. The law had passed, and money was about to begin flowing to the PA programs. Well, we recognized that if the question were raised, that John would. If the question were raised and phrased properly, that Braun would be in a position of conflict of interest and would not be able to finish out his term as president. So what we did was Godkin's ran as vice president, and as soon as we could into Braun's term, we formally got the question raised of was there a conflict of interest here. The answer came back as we expected. Yes, there was a conflict of interest, and Braun had to step down. And Godkin's became the move from the vice president position, which had been sort of sleepily not contested, to now all of a sudden being the president and getting the Academy really sort of change its focus from an internal focus to much more of an external focus. And we, I had run as secretary because I was determined that we would change the direction of the Academy and take it from an inward-looking to an outward-looking organization. And I was also determined that I would get the question asked of whether or not there was a conflict of interest for the seated president so that the vice president could then take over and do what I thought needed to, or what we, not I, but what we thought needed to be done, what a group of us thought needed to be done. So we engineered that palace coup. And Godkin's actually ended up serving out three quarters of Braun's presidency.
In a nutshell, what was the conflict of interest?
That they were going to be funding all these programs. That he worked for the office in the government that was going to be funding all these programs, and at the same time he was sitting as the president of the Academy, which was in a position to benefit indirectly. Because so many of the members of his board of directors ran the programs that would be funded.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now
it was one of those things that sort of, you know, if you say it, you believe it. Mm-hmm. Who knows if there really was a conflict of interest, but we managed to get the question asked and answered in such a way that the person we were asking sort of had to say, yeah, gee, it does sound like a conflict of interest to me.
Would you briefly review your career from Oklahoma on?
Yeah, I went to Oklahoma in 1970. Started out actually in a faculty correct. And it started out as a, what was it called? I think I started out as a clinical instructor, which was the lowest possible academic rank. By 1978, I had been promoted a couple of times, ended up with the rank of associate professor with tenure. Applied in 1977, applied for the Institute of Medicine's Robert Wood Johnson Health Policy Fellowship. Won a place in the fellowship. There, they chose six faculty members from medical schools around the country. You had to be mid-career faculty member. You couldn't be a full professor at the time. You had to be an assistant or associate professor in a medical school to win this health policy fellowship. So I went to Washington as an Institute of Medicine health policy fellow in 78. And did that for a year. And during my tenure, I, because of my interest in belief that we would ultimately have a federalized national health delivery system, I ended up working in the arena of military medical care, because one of my classmates had the corner on the Senate Health Care Committee, and I didn't want to go on the House side because it was so disorganized. So I went to work for a very strong Republican named Robin Beard, who was from Tennessee, and he was the ranking minority member on one of the Armed Services subcommittees, and hired me basically in his office to as a fellow to work on the issue of military medicine, and to help Robin and ultimately the Congress understand the issues confronting the military healthcare system. Finished that up. Went back to Oklahoma. Actually wanted to stay in Washington, but I'd gotten divorced during my fellowship year, and or my divorce had been finalized during my fellowship year, and I had custody of the children, and the deal was that part of the court battle was that I had to agree to return to Oklahoma if I was to retain custody or stay outside of Oklahoma and surrender custody, and there was no way I was going to do that. So I returned to Oklahoma, went back to the program as the program director, replicated the health policy fellowship out of the School of Public Health at Oklahoma, but managed to run several students, both medical and PA students and public health students, through sort of a mini health policy fellowship focused on state health issues, and that sort of fell apart when we had a new dean at the School of Public Health who buckled under some political pressure from the director of the state health department, who didn't like the fact that we had given a state senator, a very bright doctoral candidate from the School of Public Health, whose background was in finance and auditing, and this kid had gone to work for the state senator, who was pissed off with the health department and determined to find out how they were scamming him for money. And we gave the senator a kid from the college who did it in about 5 minutes. And the director of the state health department went to the dean and said, "If you don't stop this nonsense, you'll never again have another student train any place in the public health system in the state of Oklahoma." And the dean was such a jackass and a wimp that he buckled under the pressure and shut the program down. So anyhow, I'd replicated the health policy program. Was doing some other things, actually ended up as a candidate in 1980, after Reagan became elected. I ended up as a potential candidate for a sub-cabinet position in the Pentagon as deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs. And was all set to move to Washington right after Reagan's inaugural, but that fell apart because Carlucci was to be the original Secretary of Defense, and he and Weinberger mixed it up, and just in the Christmas just before the inauguration, and Weinberger emerged on top, and all of Carlucci's guys got thrown in the wastebasket, me included. So I stayed at Oklahoma for a couple more years, and we had a new department chairman come in and a new medical school dean come in, and it wasn't the environment for me anymore. So I left. I left the program, left the university, and went to work for a rehabilitation institute for a year. And unbeknownst to us, the owners, which was Hospital Corporation of America at the time, the owners had decided that this rehab institute would be their major tax loss. So, although they recruited some really great people, all of us had left, a group of us, three physicians and myself, had left the, university at the same time, and we were pretty excited about developing this wonderful multidisciplinary rehabilitation program. The HCA wanted to take it as a tax loss, so they, that never worked out, and ultimately I ended up going back to making the decision that I would probably leave teaching full-time and go back into clinical practice full-time. So to do that, I decided that I needed to put myself back in a trainee situation to catch up on some of the stuff that I hadn't been paying attention to clinically, and did a surgical residency, a year as a surgical resident at Montefiore in the Bronx in New York.
What was that? Which
Montefiore Hospital. It's associated. It's the teaching hospital of the Albert Einstein College of Medicine, and they had a program there that had a number of years ago. The chairman of surgery had taken positions that he had for interns, for medical MD surgical interns, and just converted those positions to being positions for PAs. And the deal was you'd go on on the pay line as a surgical intern. You got paid exactly what the surgical interns got paid, and you did everything that a surgical intern did. The difference was you weren't an MD, and they were, and that was the only difference, was the two-letter initial after somebody's name, but the workload was exactly the same. So I did that for a year. Finished that experience, which was interesting only because I did it at 42, and I was, I was working with kids. The other interns were 26 and 27, and here I was, 42. So the hours were kind of tough, but the work certainly wasn't tough, but the hours were kind of tough. I did that, and then when I finished that, there was an outbreak of a antibiotic resistant staph infection in the cardiac surgery patients. They felt it was coming from the operating room, and so the hospital decided they wanted to hire somebody who knew something about operating rooms and something about surgery, and hire somebody that could deal with the problem regardless of who was responsible. So somebody who could go head to head with the chief of surgery or chief of anesthesia or the chief nurse, and they decided that I was the one that would come in and clean up the operating room. And so I did that for about 8 months. Basically ran the operating room as sort of a cross between a good cop and a Gestapo officer. And then I ended up, through a set of sort of fortuitous experiences, taking over the Harlem Hospital PA program, which was one of three PA programs in the country devoted to minority education, training minority students or minorities, underrepresented populations, to be PAs. And I did that for 3 years, and then while I was doing it, I was living in Bangor, Maine, and commuting every week to the hospital, living at the hospital 4 nights a week, and then flying home and living in Bangor. Actually, I stayed at Harlem 3 nights a week and stayed in Bangor 4 nights a week, and that got kind of old. So I left that and went to work for myself in Bangor as a freelance surgical assistant, and moonlighting in the ERs in northern Maine, and that lasted for a year. And the person who took my place at Harlem didn't work out at all, and so just about a year after I left, the people at Harlem convinced me to go back to Harlem as the program director. And I did that for another 3.5 years, which had me be the director of the Harlem PA program for a total of 7 years. And that was a real blast. I mean, being the minority, suddenly being the minority person, an institution like Harlem, and being responsible for recruiting and training underrepresented populations in the profession was a wonderful experience. I think that's probably the second highlight of my career, the first being my health policy fellowship. The privileges of being at Harlem and working with the wonderful young people I worked with there was just an incredible experience, incredible set of experiences. In some ways, it was the toughest job I ever had because of the inherent racism and the culture of race and racism at the institutions I was working with. I worked with people from Columbia, which is not a minority population-friendly institution, and the people at City College, which are all knee-jerk liberals, and then Harlem Hospital itself, which is a pretty tough environment. So I did that, and then that was a great set of experiences in many, many ways. And then I got recruited from Harlem to back to Montefiore to start a spine service for the Department of Neurosurgery. And I did that for about 2.5 years, and the department began to fall apart, both for internal and external reasons. And I could see that the entire complex of the Department of Neurosurgery was going to be changing very shortly, and I surmised that the chairman would be ultimately dismissed, which he was. So I left there and got recruited to Quinnipiac College to start the healthcare leadership program, and got it up and started. And the president of the college suddenly woke up one morning and realized that I had expanded the scope of that program beyond his original vision, and would ultimately, if left unmolested, would have ultimately been competing very heavily with his College of Business, which was running a program in health administration. And the president, I think, realized that we were on our way to pulling all of the health practitioners out of the College of Business and under the umbrella of this program. So we decided to close the program. And at the end of June, I am unemployed. And my wife, who's been running the PA program here as the program director, has just taken a new job as program director in Oakland, California. So I'm managing the house and getting ready to trek west as an unemployed significant other.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's actually, let me tell you, it's actually weird as hell, because I have never, ever looked for a job. I mean, Dr. Estes was my mentor at Duke, and he's the one that directed me to West Virginia, and then ultimately recommended and directed me to Oklahoma. I guess I looked for a job when I competed for the fellowship. The fellowship was a very competitive process, but that was a volitional competition. And Montefiore asked me to handle the operating room, and I mean, the president of Montefiore asked me to handle the operating room, and the chairman of neurosurgery asked me to join him to start the spine program, and the people at Harlem asked me to come to the Harlem program to run it. And I'll be a son of a bitch now. All of a sudden, I'm back to what the 25-year-olds are experiencing. I'm looking for a job in an interesting market.
Really?